Juna Barnes referred to herself as the unknown legend of American literature, but the famously provocative lesbian writer makes a brief appearance in Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris. Owen Wilson dances the Charleston with her.
You look like you were having fun with Juna Barnes dancing.
Oh, yeah. Wait, that was Juna Barnes?
Yeah.
Wow, no wonder she wanted to lead.
That's Juna, D-J-U-N-A, a woman ahead of her time.
She was much more interested in embracing the quirky, almost, and embracing that sort of idea that became so famous in feminist circles, you know, half a century later, the idea of the personal is political.
That's curator Catherine Morris. She's brought Barnes's New York years back to life in a series called Newspaper Fictions at the Brooklyn Museum. The story goes that Barnes, who grew up with her mother, grandmother, polygamist father, his mistress and brothers she'd helped support, walked into the office of the Brooklyn Daily Eagle and announced, "I can draw, I can write, you'd be foolish not to hire me." They did.
Part of the series that she, ongoing series that she did, was called Odd Types, found in and around Brooklyn. So she would find individuals, strange people across class lines, across race lines, across all sort of social milieus, and kind of draw pictures for her audience, and literally draw pictures.
Her very first article for the Brooklyn Daily Eagle is on the wall. It's called You Can Tango a Little at Arcadia Dance Hall. We invited an actress to read a bit of it.
Reginald Delancey, which really isn't his name at all, but will do as well as any other to tack on to and distinguish this young man, lulled in a soft armchair in the window of his club in Clinton Street and scanned the evening papers. He was bored. The tips of his immaculate tan shoes shone brightly as ever. The creases in his trousers were like the prow of the Imperator in their incisive sharpness, but his mind was as dull as a tarnished teapot.
Barnes, like the so-called new journalists who came along in the 60s, like Tom Wolfe and Joan Didion, believed that the Observer colored this story, so why pretend otherwise? She also fabricated, or she'd make herself the story. Again, curator Catherine Morris.
A century before Christopher Hitchens was waterboarded, we have this example of what we would now call stunt journalism.
In the teens and 20s, suffragettes were being forcibly fed with long tubes in Britain during their hunger strikes for the vote. So here's Juna's dramatic take on having it done to her.
I shall be strictly professional, I assured myself. If it be an ordeal, it is familiar to my sex at this time. Other women have suffered it in acute reality. Surely I have as much nerve as my English sisters. Then I held myself steady. I thought so, and I caught sight of my face in the glass. It was quite white, and I was swallowing convulsively. And then I knew my soul stood terrified before a yard of red rubber tubing. He wrapped it round and round me, my arms tight to my sides, wrapped it up to my throat so that I could not move. I lay in as long and unbroken lines as any corpse. Unbroken, definite lines that stretched away beyond my vision. For I saw only skylight. My eyes wandered, outcasts in a world they knew.
The Brooklyn Museum exhibit of 45 articles and sketches is revealing because Juna Barnes is so much better known for her Paris years. She went there in 1921.
She interviewed people like James Joyce and others and became an active part of the really modern avant-gardes of Paris, both American and expatriate.
She returned to New York in the 30s and became a recluse, dying in 1982 in Greenwich Village. That would have been decades after she became famous in feminist circles for her novel Nightwood.
She really looked life in the face, and she didn't shy away from it in her writing or in her own decisions about her own life.
Juna Barnes lived that life at white heat, as if she thought that one day the music would stop.
Suddenly, the orchestra of eight pieces struck up a lively tune. And immediately, hundreds of gaily dressed girls and happy-looking men glided onto the floor and were two-stepping with vigor and vim. But there wasn't even so much as a wiggle of the shoulders to suggest the turkey trot. Reginald found that the sight of so many swaying bodies was infectious.
Much of her writing is out of print, but in Newspaper Fictions at the Brooklyn Museum, she lives. The exhibit's up through the summer.